Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today, hear why a dire water shortage at Borrego Springs looks even worse due to a failed water bond measure. Parents, be sure to listen up to our warning on drug cartels recruiting teenagers to smuggle drugs across our border. Then we'll have the latest twists and turns in a court debtor's exam involving Councilman Ben Colasso and his wife, Jessica. We'll have some tips on preparing for stormy weather, plus lessons learned from the campfire. Then on Green Scene, hear the dire findings of a climate change report that President Donald Trump says he doesn't believe, even though it was prepared by his own administration. Hear reactions to the border shutdown and use of tear gas against migrant children, as well as how that shutdown impacted local businesses. Learn why a La Mesa woman, who is a quadriplegic, is speaking out on medical marijuana treatments. And then on Destination East County, hear about holiday happenings coming up. We'll have some good news on progress made by a boy on a bicycle who was struck by a car in El Cajon, and what he credits with his survival. Then we'll have some Best of East County favorites, including the true tale of the De Anza Expedition's encampment in East County one long ago Christmas Eve, some tips from the county for holiday shoppers to avoid overcharges, reflections on the holiday season from a descendant of Charles Dickens who authored A Christmas Carol, and finally, news about the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum's centennial celebration. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Show, where East County matters.
Borrego Springs is under a state mandate to submit a plan early next year to reduce the desert community's water consumption by 75% by 2040. The town relies on 100% groundwater, and it's using far more than is being replenished through rainfall. Citrus and palm farms use 70 to 80% of Borrego's water, so the only way to meet the state requirement and save the town's only water supply is to eliminate some or all of those farms. Proposition 3, a statewide ballot initiative on the November ballot, would have provided $35 million in funds earmarked to buy farmlands in Borrego Springs, remove the water-hogging citrus and palm tree crops, and make the properties part of Anza Borrego Desert State Park. But Prop 3 failed by a narrow margin. An article in the Borrego Sun newspaper calls the defeat frustrating. A San Diego Union-Tribune article goes further, stating, "At stake is the very future of the community." At a community meeting last week held by the Borrego Water District, a standing-room-only crowd included residents voicing fears over falling property values, inability to sell homes, and concerns that jobs may dry up. If nothing is done, the town could run out of water completely, and meanwhile, be forced to invest in drilling into deeper, ancient water that would require costly filtration to make it drinkable. Jeff Poole, general manager of the Borrego Water District, told concerned citizens that a 75% water use reduction is scary. So what are the options now for San Diego County and the Borrego Water District, the two entities responsible for coming up with a plan to show the state how that water reduction will be met? One proposal is to put the initiative back on the ballot in 2020 and invest more money to make sure that voters know what's at stake in Borrego Springs, here in San Diego County's easternmost area, a town that attracts snowbirds from across the nation who flock here for the warm winter sunshine. Borrego is also a mecca for art lovers, housing major arts events, and stargazers as an International Dark Skies designated community. It draws fans each fall to the Borrego Days Desert Festival and Parade, as well as many visitors coming to the Anza Borrego Desert State Park, which does not operate any inns or indoor lodging options of its own. Although many permanent residents in Borrego Springs are low income, the town has also long attracted movie stars and titans of industry seeking a relaxing respite in the desert. The Borrego Sun speculates that Prop 3 may have failed because of opposition by some voters to provisions that would also have bailed out farmers in the Central Valley, where canal repairs are needed due to damage from large agribusinesses The Borrego Sun speculates that Prop 3 may have failed because of opposition by some voters to provisions that would have also bailed out farmers in the Central Valley, where some land is sinking, and canal repairs are needed due to damage from large agribusiness farmers overpumping groundwater supplies. The bond also failed to guarantee state oversight to assure that grants paid to farmers would be used as promised, and supporters of Prop 3 may simply have not spent enough on TV ads to explain the dire need to help save Borrego Springs. Next up, meters will be placed on all private wells to measure exactly how much water they are pumping out of the aquifer, and conservation by residents and non-farming businesses is encouraged. But any savings by non-agricultural water users will only be a drop in the bucket compared to the massive amounts of precious water resources flowing to irrigate crops in the desert terrain. Other options include seeking funds from other sources to buy out farms, such as through legislation and grants. $1 million grant was obtained last year to study the economic impacts on residents and workers as water levels continue to fall, with no solution yet in sight. Reporting for East County Magazine in Borrego Springs, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
Drug cartels are using teenagers to smuggle a variety of contraband across the border in our region. But once a teen has been caught at the border smuggling drugs and is on the law enforcement radar, drug cartels use them for another illegal purpose: recruiting. By taking advantage of recruiters' access to young relatives, classmates, and friends, criminal organizations are able to tap into the naivety and cheap labor of teens to smuggle high-potency drugs such as fentanyl and methamphetamine over the border. Teens who turn into recruiters are committing a crime, even if they don't smuggle drugs themselves. Mary Loeb, a juvenile prosecutor in the San Diego County District Attorney's Office, warns, "Juveniles who try to convince their peers to smuggle drugs on behalf of dangerous cartels can still face legal consequences. Recruiters and smugglers alike are often kids who are socioeconomically disadvantaged. They can easily be enticed by promises of money, clothes, or electronics, if these are sought-after items that would normally be out of their reach. For other teens, the appeal is a lifestyle centered on prestige, partying, and social status. But Loeb warns, drug cartels are falsely promising easy money and protection, but there is nothing easy or safe about this lifestyle. Teens most commonly use schools as recruiting grounds, but can also spot potential smugglers on public transportation, libraries, clubs, at the border, or in Mexico. Recruiters also use social media, gaming consoles, and chat rooms to recruit teens. Besides tapping into their own network of friends and family, they may also target a young person whom they think can be easily tempted by money or social status, or one who is a latchkey and often alone, especially when traveling at the border. Law enforcement also encourages parents to know who their kids' friends are and who they are hanging out with, both in person and online. Parents should pay particular attention if teens are crossing the border, and be sure you can trust who is going with them. If you have concerns about a teen being recruited to smuggle, call the local Drug Enforcement Agency office at 858-616-4100 or submit a tip via the DEA website at dea.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Shardé Fontenot.
El Cajon City Councilman Ben Colasso and his wife Jessica are slated to return to San Diego Superior Court on December 7th for another judgment debtor exam after Jessica failed to show up at two prior court appearances. A debtor exam is a way for plaintiffs to determine the defendant's assets in order to satisfy a court judgment. At a hearing in November, Councilman Colasso told Judge Kenneth Medell that Jessica was in a hospital but did not disclose details. The judge denied a motion by Colasso to postpone the hearing. Jessica was also a no-show at an earlier hearing in August. Judge Medell warned Councilman Colasso that if his wife does not show up for the December 7th hearing, she could be arrested. At the November hearing, attorney Jennifer Hassel represented plaintiff Lena Chari, one of several plaintiffs suing Colosio on charges ranging from defamation to sexual harassment. As Hassel questioned Colosio, he stonewalled on many answers. Asked how many corporations he has filed for in California, Colosio said, "I don't know." He later acknowledged his ownership of the Miss Middle East Beauty Pageant USA and the since-dissolved San Diego East County Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce. Asked to name officers in these corporations, Colosio objected. Further questions revealed that Colosio and his attorney James Finnegan had failed to bring corporate records to the debtor's exam, which had been demanded under a subpoena, records deemed vital to determine the extent of their financial assets. Judge Medel issued a preliminary order for a bench warrant for Jessica Colosio, with bail set at $5,000 if she does not appear on December 7th. Medel then issued a stern warning to Colosio and Finnegan, stating, "I like to keep things in my courtroom light and easy, but I do warn you that I do have a dark side." He then ordered Colosio to be sure and bring those documents to the December 7th hearing. Although the Colosios have previously told the court that they are indigent and not capable of paying any settlement with the plaintiffs as the case moves forward, videos posted by Ben Colosio on his Facebook page in November show him on what appears to be a vacation in a tropical locale or resort, frolicking beneath a waterfall, walking on a beach, and riding in a boat. Earlier this fall, the supposedly destitute councilman also loaned his campaign $10,000 for his unsuccessful run in the first El Cajon City Council District election. Colosio lost to Councilman Gary Kendrick by about an 85-15% margin, although he will still retain his council seat for 2 years, since he was elected in the city's last at-large election to a 4-year term. Through a garnishment of a Colosio bank account, one of the plaintiffs, Jala Tafig, a former beauty pageant contestant, has collected over $4,700, partially satisfying her judgment against Colosio. Among the complaints filed against the Colosios in court are allegations backed up by extensive documentation accusing the couple of harassing and defaming multiple plaintiffs on social media, including beauty pageant contestants, a taco shop owner, and Lena Chari, an attorney who previously won judgments against Colosio. Councilman Colosio also settled a separate federal lawsuit filed by Mark Lane, in which Colosio agreed to stop blocking opponents on social media or deleting their critical posts, actions that courts have previously found to be unconstitutional in similar cases involving elected officials, including President Donald Trump. Notably, in recent weeks, Jessica Colosio's Facebook page has vanished. And then on November 27th, Ben Colosio posted on Facebook, "For my New Year's resolution, I'm going to give up all social media. Shocking, I know, but I need to play with my dog more. He's getting upset," the councilman concluded. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Winter storms in California can bring hazards including flooding, mudslides, snowstorms, and high surf. Being prepared can help you weather the storms safely. When driving in rainy weather, slow down. In mountain areas, be aware that roads may be icy, especially in the morning or at night. Avoid driving in a snowstorm, and if you must be on the road in mountain areas when snow is forecast, carry tire chains as well as food, water, and a blanket in case your vehicle becomes disabled. Never walk or drive across a flooded roadway or waterway, since even a small amount of fast-flowing water can swiftly engulf a vehicle or pull a pedestrian under. If a flood warning is issued, take shelter right away. Sandbags can help divert water and debris from your property to prevent erosion. You can find free sand and sandbags at many fire stations across San Diego County, or purchase them at retail home supply or hardware stores. The San Diego Flood Control District has webcams at several frequent low-water locations, and you can view streaming video from the cameras at their website, sdcfcd.com. Again, that stands for San Diego County Flood Control District. Standard homeowners insurance does not cover flooding. The National Flood Insurance Program is available to property owners to financially protect themselves before your property floods. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has flood hazard maps and other resources to help you assess your flooding risk. Residents in recent wildfire burn areas should be aware of the increased potential for mudslides, debris flow, and severe flooding. Mudslides can move swiftly, so if an evacuation order is given, don't wait. Get out immediately. Know your evacuation routes ahead of time so that you can escape as quickly as possible if an emergency occurs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's backcountry.
The deadliest and most destructive wildfire in California history is finally fully contained. The Camp Fire scorched over 153,000 acres and destroyed 18,000 structures, including 14,000 homes. At least 85 people died. Firefighters got some help from Mother Nature in the form of rainfall. But with winter storms forecast, too much rain could lead to mudslides in recently burned areas of the Camp Fire in Butte County, as well as hillsides left bare in Ventura and Los Angeles counties after the Woolsey and Hill fires there. President Trump has blamed inadequate forestry clearing practices for the deadly Camp Fire, but the state's top fire officials have rejected that argument, noting that years of drought fueled by climate change have led to bigger and more destructive fires. The vast majority of California's forests are federally owned, with most of the remaining forests under private control. On state-controlled lands, significant clearing of dead trees has already been done, including through controlled burns. The Camp Fire began under power lines owned by Pacific Gas and Electric Company, though CAL FIRE has not yet announced whether investigators found PG&E equipment at fault. The burned areas included forests that had already been logged, as well as suburban communities. The federal government issued a disaster declaration. But unlike in prior major disasters, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, has not provided trailers or other temporary housing for Camp Fire survivors, many of whom were camped in a Walmart parking lot until they were evicted by officials and left on their own. The Camp Fire is expected to worsen the state's affordable housing crisis, with 14,000 people left without homes from the Camp Fire alone, including many at risk of remaining homeless without additional aid. The deadly blaze has also ignited controversy over building homes in dangerous fire-prone areas without adequate evacuation routes. If you would like to help survivors of California's recent wildfires, Global Giving has established a California Wildfire Relief Fund that will be used for both emergency supplies and long-term help to recover and rebuild. You can donate at globalgiving.org and select the California Wildfire Relief Fund project. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Sharday Fontenot.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Green Scene Report. On Black Friday, while most Americans were out shopping or enjoying the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, the Trump administration released a climate assessment report prepared by officials from 13 federal agencies. It includes dire warnings about climate change, which directly conflict with President Donald Trump's climate change denial. The report, mandated by Congress, is a collaboration of over 300 federal government experts in Trump's own administration, as well as independent scientists. It concludes that, quote, Earth's climate is now changing faster than at any point in the history of modern civilization, and further concludes that greenhouse gas emissions from human activities are the only factors that can account for warming that threatens our planet. The negative effects of climate change are now obvious in every part of the U.S., the report indicates. That includes deadly wildfires in California, reduced rainfall and snowmelt threatening western water supplies, extreme hurricanes and tornadoes impacting the East Coast, Gulf states, and Midwest, rapidly thawing permafrost in Alaska, bleached coral reefs off Florida, and rising seas that threaten U.S. coastal communities and islands such as Hawaii, where one small island recently completely disappeared. The impacts are already costing the U.S. billions of dollars and are expected to become far worse. Those impacts include relocation of people in some coastal communities that are becoming submerged, loss of croplands due to drought, harm to economies based on tourism or outdoor recreation, mass extinction of species, and spread of diseases once found only in the tropics. Climate change causes weather extremes ranging from severe snowstorms to record-breaking heat. Despite this, Trump tweeted flippantly on Wednesday during a cold spell on the East Coast, "Whatever happened to global warming?" Using the Twitter hashtag Climate Friday, political, scientific, and environmental leaders are criticizing Trump for trying to, quote, bury the report's dire findings by releasing it on a holiday weekend. Trump's policies have increased fossil fuel production and pollution by greenhouse gases, actions that accelerate climate change when experts agree a massive global effort is needed to try and reverse climate change before a point of no return for the planet is reached. National Wildlife Federation's President Colin O'Mara posted on Twitter, "This is the national climate assessment that the White House does not want you to read," adding, "We must act now to protect communities, economy, water, public health, ecosystems, agriculture, infrastructure, etc." As Democrats prepare to take back the House of Representatives and Congress, many leading voices concerned over climate change are urging House Democrats to draft a new Green Deal legislative package aimed at taking action to address climate change. But any such effort could face opposition in the GOP-controlled Senate. Even if a new Green Deal measure could pass both houses of Congress with bipartisan support, however, a presidential veto could kill the bill. That chilling prospect seems a realistic scenario, given President Trump's irrational denial of facts on climate change, despite overwhelming evidence now documented by hundreds of experts in over a dozen agencies headed by his own conservative cabinet appointees in the Trump administration.
Reactions are pouring into the Trump administration's deployment of tear gas against members of an immigrant caravan over the Thanksgiving weekend, including women and children, when the nation's busiest international border crossing at San Ysidro was shut down for 5 hours. Lorella Pirelli, Deputy Political Director for the American Civil Liberties Union, or ACLU, has denounced the actions. She says, "Under no circumstances should Border Patrol agents be using tear gas on children," adding, "This show of violence is outrageous and inhumane. The migrants at our southern border are human beings, including mothers and small children who are exercising their legal human right to seek asylum. Trump's obsessive racist crusade against immigrants will continue to inflict human pain and suffering until Congress is willing to step up and conduct real oversight." Rodney Scott, Chief Patrol Agent with U.S. Customs and Border Patrol in San Diego, has sought to justify the agent's actions. He told CNN that what he saw at the border during the confrontation was, quote, "not people walking up to the Border Patrol agents and asking to claim asylum." He said the first migrants in the caravan instead threw rocks at agents wearing riot gear, and the agents acted in self-defense. San Diego's Democratic Congressman, Juan Vargas, issued a statement calling the border conflict a direct result of President Trump's failed leadership, adding, "His complete disregard for human rights, international law, and immigration law threatens the safety of federal officers and the millions of people that pass through the border region." The president continues to address a complex global issue with an offensive simplicity that makes the United States appear callous and xenophobic to our neighbors and allies. Vargas notes that the president and the Republican-controlled House and Senate have had 2 years to pass the immigration reform and improve our asylum process. But he adds, "Sadly, they have failed to take any productive action. Now, more than ever, our country needs bipartisan, comprehensive immigration reform. Comprehensive immigration reform will improve border security while treating immigrants with human decency," the congressman concludes. The Trump administration has defied a federal judge's order that migrants and the caravan will be allowed to submit asylum claims, a right protected by international law for people fleeing persecution in their homelands. Many in the caravan have said they faced violence or death threats from drug cartels seeking to force adults and children into the drug trade in Central America. San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner, a Republican, met with Homeland Security Secretary Christian Nielsen to discuss the crisis on November 25th, the day of the border shutdown in San Ysidro. The mayor posted on Twitter, "My focus remains on the safety of our communities and maintaining cross-border commerce. But cross-border commerce may become a casualty of the Trump administration's tough anti-immigration stance if the president has his way." One day after the border confrontation, Trump tweeted that if Mexico doesn't send the migrants back to their home countries, "we will close the border permanently if need be." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Chardé Fontenot.
La Mesa resident Makia Simpson suffered a broken spine when she was hit by a driver who fell asleep at the wheel back in 2010 when she was 18 years old. At a conference at the La Mesa United Methodist Church this month, Simpson told the audience, "I broke my spine behind the neck." That left her a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the neck down and confined to a wheelchair. She endured years of pain before turning to hemp oil containing cannabidiol, or CBD, for help, a treatment she calls life-changing. Before, Simpson says she suffered severe muscle spasms and intense pain, as well as insomnia and depression. Then she heard a speaker talk about Echo Connection, a nonprofit organization founded in 2017 that provides families in need with cannabis education and CBD hemp oil products. Through Echo Connection, more than 70 families now receive a monthly shipment of CBD for many different conditions, such as epilepsy, autism, Parkinson's, and PTSD. Simpson signed up and started consuming the oil in August of this year. She says she can feel the effects 30 minutes after taking a dose of hemp oil. She's also written a book titled Broken But Healed, The Story of a Street Girl's Ridiculous Faith, that is available on Amazon.com. Our reporter spoke with her at the third annual Women of All Abilities Conference, organized by Rolling With Me, a nonprofit that helps to encourage people with disabilities. The event also focused on interpersonal communication, an adaptive sports clinic, career training workshop, mental health workshop, adaptive art class, financial advancement, and a dance workshop. Margarita Elizondo, CEO and founder of Rolling With Me, introduced Simpson to using CBD oil instead of addictive narcotic pain medications. Elizondo is also in a wheelchair. "I was shot by an intruder when I was pregnant," she recalls. Elizondo suffered a spinal cord injury and lost her baby due to the trauma. Simpson participated in an adaptive boxing session at the conference. She also stays active in adaptive sports in other areas of her life, such as skiing, and now makes appearances as an inspirational speaker to motivate other people with disabilities. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's backcountry. Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
The holiday season in East County has many festive events, including the Alpine Parade of Lights and Snow Festival, La Mesa's Holiday in the Village, Breakfast with Santa in Alpine, the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra's Christmas Concert, an Enchanted Village in Spring Valley, North Pole Limited train rides at the Campo Depot, and an outdoor ice skating rink at Viejas.
Plus, there are non-holiday happenings, including concerts by Fleetwood Mac, Leanne Rimes, Barry Manilow, and comedian Trevor Noah.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
The 23rd Annual Alpine Village Parade of Lights and Snow Festival offers Santa, snow sledding, and fun for the whole family on December 7th. The parade begins at Alpine Boulevard and West Victoria Drive at 6 p.m. and ends in the Alpine Creek Town Center. Hosted by the Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce, the parade features floats and other entries aglow with holiday lights. The festival features real snow for sledding, as well as vendor booths, children's activities, and more. For more information, visit alpinechamber.com.
The La Mesa Village Association will present Holiday in the Village December 7th and 8th. You're invited to stroll through the streets of La Mesa's historic downtown to enjoy live music and dance, cozy fires, craft vendors, food, and a kids' area with holiday movies and activities. There will also be fire pits, caroling, and more in the spirit of the season. You can find more information at lamesavillageassociation.org.
Fleetwood Mac, one of the world's best-selling bands, will be live at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on December 8th at 8 p.m. The British rock group, known for hits such as Black Magic Woman, still includes its two original title members, Mick Fleetwood and John McVie, along with some new talent. The band has sold over 100 million records worldwide, winning an Emmy Award and induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame over 50 years. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com.
You're invited to bring the kids and savor breakfast with Santa at the Alpine Community Center on Saturday, December 8th from 9 to 11 a.m. Every child will receive a gift from Santa. There will also be holiday crafts for kids. Tickets are available at alpinecommunitycenter.com.
The San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present its annual Christmas concert on Sunday, December 9th at 3 p.m. at the College Avenue Baptist Church. The program opens with Charles Gounod's St. Cecilia Mass, written in honor of the patron saint of music, St. Cecilia. The second half of the program features a selection of seasonal music, ranging from traditional carols to new settings of old favorites to some less familiar Christmas songs. For tickets, visit sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
Noah's Homes in Spring Valley presents the first ever Enchanted Village Festival of Trees and Lights, running Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays from December 14th through 23rd. Created by the designer of the Magical Forest in Las Vegas, the Enchanted Village Festival features an array of illuminated Christmas displays as well as carolers, a choir, and Santa's workshop. But the real magic here isn't only the sparkling lights at the Enchanted Village. It's the wonderful work done year-round by Noah's Homes, a nonprofit residency facility for disabled adults that helps to foster lifelong independence, dignity, and respect. For tickets, visit enchantedvillage.org.
The famous North Pole Limited returns to celebrate the holiday season at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo. Aboard the historic 1920s train, Santa's elves will sing Christmas carols, read a popular holiday story, pass out cookies and hot chocolate to all, then stop at Santa's workshop to pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus. Advance tickets are recommended, as this popular attraction often sells out. The North Pole Limited train will run Fridays and Saturdays now through December 22nd. For tickets, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
Pickwick Players and Santee will present It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play continuing now through December 15th. The production recounts the classic story of George Bailey's Christmas Eve, when the depressed man is visited by a guardian angel who shows him the lives he has touched and then shows him how different his community of Bedford Falls would have been without him. For tickets, visit pickwickplayers.net.
Singer Barry Manilow will present a Barry Merry Christmas Concert December 13th at 7:30 p.m. at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University. The winner of a Grammy Award and a Tony Award for Broadway appearances, Manilow began his career singing duets with Bette Midler and jingles for McDonald's commercials before gaining fame as a soloist. He is best known for hit songs such as Mandy, I Write the Songs, and Copacabana. For tickets, visit the Viejas Arena website.
The youngest singer to win a Grammy and also be nominated by the Academy of Country Music, Leanne Rimes, will be live on stage at the Oak Ballroom at Viejas Casino and Resort on Friday, December 14th at 8 p.m. With a string of hits throughout her career, she is still best known for her signature song, Blue. For tickets and details, visit viejas.com and click on the entertainment option.
Comedian and author Trevor Noah brings his Loud and Clear tour to the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on December 15th. The host of Comedy Central's The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, known for his humorous take on politics, is also the author of Afraid of the Dark and Born a Crime, his memoir. The title references his birth to mixed-race parents in South Africa, a crime under apartheid rule at the time. For tickets, visit Ticketmaster.com.
The Hamul Casino will be ringing in the new year with a New Year's Eve party December 31st that starts at noon and continues until 2019 arrives. Options include a New York-style dinner at the Prime Cut Steakhouse or a lobster and prime rib buffet at the Tony Gwynn Sports Bar, plus DJs and live entertainment until 1:30 a.m. at Tony Gwynn's, the Jive Lounge, and the Loft 94 Beer Garden. For full details, you can visit HamulCasinoSD.com.
The largest outdoor skating rink in Southern California is open now through January 6th at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. Rental skates are available. In addition to ice skating, visitors can enjoy holiday entertainment and a seasonal water show. For more information, visit viejas.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, EastCountyMagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@EastCountyMagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
This is Shardé Fontenot with some holiday light safety tips. Did you know between November and December, there are about 240 injuries per day caused by holiday decorating related injuries in the U.S.? That's a lot of injuries that could be prevented. Here are some tips for hanging those holiday lights provided by Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, a columnist for East County Magazine. One of the most common causes of holiday time house fires results from these bulbs being too close to gutters filled with dried out leaves and twigs from recent Santa Ana winds. Remember, we still may have Santa Ana wind events in forecast. Make sure your decorations are properly secured and stable in the yard, on the house, and in trees. Check the actual plug and make sure you are using lights designated for outdoor use only. If you have a string of lights with a blown out bulb, be sure to replace it with a bulb of the exact same wattage. Avoid using nails, tacks, or metal staples to secure your outdoor Christmas lights. Instead, use insulated hooks. Use only outdoor rated extension cords. Connect no more than 3 strings of lights to a single extension cord. All plugs should be plugged into a GFCI protected outlet when used outside. If you're using a ladder to hang lights, be sure you have a safe, solid foundation and never place the ladder in damp or muddy areas. Avoid any overhead wires and have someone hold the ladder to secure it for you. If you feel unstable or uncomfortable climbing a ladder, ask for help or hire a professional to be sure that you and your family have a happy and safe holiday season.
A boy who suffered serious injuries due to a hit-and-run driver in El Cajon credits a bicycle helmet with saving his life. On October 4th, 9-year-old Hassan Haider was riding his bicycle to Johnson Elementary School when he was struck by a blue Honda at the intersection of Main and Sunshine Streets. East County Magazine photographer Robert Gehr was a witness who rushed to comfort the boy while another bystander called 911. Gehr described the scene as the nightmare I wished I never had to see. The boy suffered a head injury, facial fracture, and fractured vertebrae. He was hospitalized for nearly a month and underwent several surgeries. But fortunately, NBC7 reports, he is now home and back in school. El Cajon police distributed surveillance video showing the vehicle involved in the crash, and Lieutenant Steve Kirk has thanked the public for coming forward with tips that led to the arrest of the suspect, who was found hiding under a bed at her lakeside residence. Courtney Weber was charged with felony hit and run. She was driving on a suspended license at the time due to a prior conviction of driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show, and now it's time for the Sounds of History. On December 24th, back in 1775, Juan Bautista de Anza's colonizing expedition from Spain spent the night in Coyote Canyon, an area that's now part of the Anza Borrego Desert in Borrego Springs. Writer Dick Overturf penned these words about that ordeal. It was Noche Buena, Christmas Eve, in Anza's camp. It was cold, foggy, and rainy. Earlier, it had been snowing. Everyone and everything was wet. Babies were crying. Women were weeping. Dead cattle lay on the ground. Hundreds of horses, mules, burros, and cattle were milling around Maria Gertrudis Rivas, who was in labor. Few could sleep, and the mountain Cahuilla Indians were watching. Who were these intruders? The soldiers and settlers in De Anza's expedition had been on the march north from Mexico for 87 days when they reached Coyote Canyon, seeking the promised land at Mission San Gabriel. An earthquake struck that night also, rattling the group's composure amid the bitter cold. After Friar Pedro Font recited evening prayers or vespers, Colonel Anza distributed a potent brandy drink, aguardiente, to raise his soldiers' morale. Friar Font took offense, declaring that it is not right to celebrate the birth of the infant Jesus with drunkenness, to which De Anza replied, I do not give it to them to get drunk. He insisted that the king had ordered the brandy for the soldiers, but warned that if any soldier was found drunk outside his tent, he would be punished. Friar Font later reported that the people that night were so noisy, singing and dancing from the effects of the liquor, not caring that we were in so bad a mountain in the rain, and so delayed with the saddle animals and tired cattle, but such is the rule of those absolute lords. This was not the first time Friar Font had scolded the expedition's commander. Just 1 week earlier, a fandango, or jubilant dance and feast, was held. The fandango at San Felipe, said Font, was somewhat discordant, and a very bold widow who came with the expedition sang some verses which were not at all nice, applauded and cheered by all the crowd. Now, at the Christmas Eve encampment in Coyote Canyon, after the celebration died down, the friar comforted a soldier's wife who had been in labor since the day before. She was fearful of dying, and I consoled her as best I could, he wrote. Shortly before midnight on Christmas Eve, the soldier's wife gave birth to a baby boy, who was christened Salvador Ignacio Linares. He was the third child born on the expedition, and the first white child born in California. A monument honoring the baby's birth on the eve of the Nativity still stands today, about 2.25 miles from Anza Ridge, near the San Diego County line. The day after the child's birth, the weary band of travelers rested before continuing on their way. Father Font delivered a sermon and then wished them all Feliz Navidad, or Merry Christmas.
The County of San Diego has some tips for holiday shoppers to help you avoid being accidentally overcharged by faulty price scanners or cash registers. Every year, the County's Department of Agriculture weights and measures inspects more than 1,500 local businesses, checking price scanning devices, scales that charge items by weight, and other equipment that set prices, to make sure they are charging customers accurately. But even the best businesses have occasional overcharges. Between January and October, almost 1 out of every 10 stores inspected had overcharge errors, and the average overcharge was $1.85. An extra couple of bucks may not sound alarming, but in the holiday shopping season, Even tiny overcharges can add up to make big dents in your wallet or pocketbook. Always check your receipts and immediately notify store management of any price discrepancies. Stores are required to display the price of an item as you are buying it before the transaction is complete. Watch the display screen as your items are scanned. Stores cannot legally charge more than their lowest advertised, posted, or quoted price. You can also download and use the county's Tell Us Now app to contact Agriculture, Weights and Measures, or report overcharges that you can't resolve with a store by calling the AWM department at 1-888-TRUE-SCAN. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is John Fisteer.
Hello, my name is David Dickens, David Charles Dickens to be exact. I want to talk to you today, audience, about the links between me and Charles Dickens and the writers that have become in our family. According to my late grandfather, Charles Elmer Dickens, who died in the summer of 1992, prior to departing, I was told I am related to Charles Dickens, one of our greatest authors of all time. And I am four generations down, so a great, 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 great grandfather, right down the family tree. I'm a current freelancer for East County Magazine, write mostly sports features. However, if something creative comes my way, I'm always happy to take it. Also come from another family member, my father, Bill Dickens, who currently owns EastCountySports.com. Has been covering sports locally in East County for over 43 years. I'm going to speak about Charles Dickens today and one of his finest novels, A Christmas Carol, that was written in December of 1843. Not only is this a great selection for the season, but also referring to Dickens' early childhood, humiliating experiences, his sympathy for the poor folks, and great fairy tales he was read as a child. The lesson that should be learned from this particular novel is how greed and the love of money can lead to destruction, selfishness. But in the end, after visits from the Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future spirits from the novel, Ebenezer Scrooge learns to appreciate life. If we as human beings have an abundance of wealth, it should be shared with the less fortunate. The love of human beings far outweighs the gift of wealth. Dickens' humiliating experiences are not specifically indicated in this novel. However, his conflicting feelings for his father as a result of these experiences are responsible for the double personality of the novel's protagonist, Ebenezer Scrooge. In 1824, Dickens' father, John, was hauled off to prison at the Marshalsea, and Charles, 12 at the time, only 12, was forced to stay at inns nearby, pawn off his great book collection, and drop out of school, and take up employment at a blacking factory. Charles had a deep sense of etiquette and intellect, and was very uncomfortable in the factory atmosphere and the co-workers who worked directly with him. His co-workers referred to him as the young gentleman. Charles' father was released. After 3 months in confinement, his father made him return to the factory instead of going back into school, which obviously was a mistake, and it only angered and humiliated Charles even further. Charles basically says his happy life went on to be nothing but anguish and pain. These disturbances caused many psychological issues and haunting memories, as Charles goes on. Charles both loved and despised his father. These psychological issues assisted in creating the two different personalities of Ebenezer Scrooge, a cold, stingy, greedy individual, and on the other personality, sociable generosity and goodwill toward all men was his outlook, an angel type of man. Another inspiration was early in his childhood that he observed the lives of men, women and children in the most poverty-stricken areas of London and witnessed the social injustices they suffered. So basically he went on after writing this novel, and he actually, years later, he took it to another level and actually was reading it live on stage, which definitely got a great following. And once he departed, of course, we also know quite a few people went on to create A Christmas Carol movie. I believe the most recent one that everybody has probably seen, the animated version of A Christmas Carol starring Jim Carrey, which is definitely something to see, but it's more a comedic look into the actual novel, which that's not the direction that Charles Dickens was really wanting you to understand. And what I would like you folks in the audience to get from this really is, let's enjoy ourselves as a family and have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and not be all about the gifts and what we could and could not afford this year. Just the warm hearts, getting together, and loving each other. I leave you with that, and this is David Charles Dickens signing off. And again, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year on behalf of East County Magazine.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
New data out today show that only 3% of California children are uninsured, the same as last year. But advocates say they worry that federal policies could reverse the gains. Researchers with the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families found that nationally, almost a decade of progress has begun to slip, with 5% of kids now uninsured. Mike O'Day with Children Now says California's health care policies, like the decision to allow undocumented kids into Medi-Cal, have an outsized impact.
Because of the size of California, we have about 300,000 uninsured kids, and that's about 8% of the nation's total uninsured kids. So we can really make a difference in California. You know, we need to think about health coverage affordability for families and what that means for the family budget.
Anecdotal evidence shows that enrollment in a number of public assistance programs is already dropping because the Trump administration has proposed changes to the public charge rules that make the use of certain programs count against legal immigrants when they apply for citizenship. The administration says migrants must be able to support themselves financially. Araceli Navarro with the Children's Partnership says her research predicts that if the changes to public charge go through, the uninsured rate for children in California would jump between 2 and 5 percentage points, as mixed status families with children who are U.S. citizens are scared into dropping needed benefits.
Our data is showing there is significant chilling effect factors, including public charge, that are going to play a role in whether people remain uninsured and or utilize their coverage.
The deadline for public comment on the proposal at the website regulations.gov is December 10th. Joan Alker, co-author of the Georgetown Report, says the Trump administration's attempt to repeal and undermine the Affordable Care Act, the caps on Medicaid, and the delay in funding the Children's Health Insurance Program have all worked to thwart progress.
Even though we have an improving economy and a low unemployment rate, the fact that our nation is going backwards on kids' health coverage is very troubling. And the fact that all 50 states failed to make progress, even those with the best of intentions, means they really couldn't withstand these strong national currents to protect their kids from losing coverage.
The administration cut the open enrollment period for the ACA in half. It remains open until December 15th. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show. And now, it's time for the Sounds of History.
This is John Fister with East County Magazine's Sounds of History. The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association is launching a year-long 100-year anniversary celebration to commemorate completion of the San Diego and Arizona Railway back on November 15, 1919. A reenactment ceremony at the Campo Railroad Park and Museum will be held next year on November 16, 2019. Between now and then, centennial activities will include free lectures at libraries and community groups, special events with other local historical organizations, a groundbreaking festival and presentation of silent movies with chase scenes showing the San Diego and Arizona Railway. Free lectures by volunteers and the loan of a traveling exhibit can be requested at psrm.org. Diana Hyatt, president of the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum, says, "We're very excited about kicking off our year-long celebration and the leading up to the 100th anniversary of the country's final transcontinental railroad," adding, "We invite all San Diego residents to join the celebration." Predominantly financed by entrepreneur John D. Spreckles at a cost of $18 million, or roughly $123,000 per mile, the rail line was called the Impossible Railroad by engineers of its day due to the immense logistical challenges. Those challenges included extreme terrain requiring 2.5 miles of bridges and trestles and 21 tunnels, with 11 miles through the treacherous Carrizo Gorge, an area where cliffs dropped more than 1,000 feet to the bottom. Additional construction challenges included floods, landslides, fires, hot weather, deaths from the flu, sabotage by Mexican revolutionaries, and various delays caused by World War I. Stretching 148 miles from San Diego to El Centro, the San Diego and Arizona Railway included 44 miles in Mexico and took 12 years to complete. On November 15, 1919, Spreckles himself drove the final golden spike, which he accidentally bent during a ceremony held at Carrizo Gorge, 35 miles east of Campo in Anzo Borrego Desert State Park, attended by an estimated crowd of 1,000 people, including dignitaries, city officials, and residents. Photos show the crowd laughing at the bent iron railway spike, which was plated with gold. Completion of the San Diego and Arizona Railway established a direct continental rail link to the east, connecting with the Southern Pacific Railroad in El Centro. Before then, San Diegans had to travel to Los Angeles to connect with an eastbound train. The line is still partially in use today for vintage train rides at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Depot, where you can also view vintage trains and memorabilia. A portion of the line is also still used by three freight operators. There are also aspirations by some investors to restore the line and to someday reopen the Impossible Railway line across East County's rugged terrain.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.